So I was listening the other day to a talk by Tara Brach. Have you listened? Have any of you listened to some talks by her? She's an excellent teacher. So this is me quoting Tara Brach, quoting the Buddha. Okay? It goes like this. This is what Tara said, the Buddha said about comparing mind. Tara Brach says, the Buddha said, one who thinks themselves superior to, inferior to, or even equal to another person wanders about annoying people. So I know it's kind of hilarious. I think it's hilarious. And that annoying people includes annoying ourselves when we're comparing ourselves, right? Like we just, it's not so wholesome, but it's a thing that we all do. I'm sure of it. I'm sure you compare yourself, and I know I do. It turns out it's one of my favorite brain activities to do, in fact, which is to compare. And it inevitably leads to some suffering. Have you noticed this? So it's a universal tendency. It's in each of us. And it's really in our cultural soup that we grow up into. It's in our educational system. It's in our families. It's all around us. It's in our advertising. It's in the media. It's everywhere, this comparison. It's like we're in a soup. We're in a comparing soup. So we're all in this soup of comparing. So it's not personal. It is personal to you. You probably have comparing tendencies. It turns out, when I started paying attention to this for myself, it turns out that I'm often comparing myself as better than other people. That's how it shows up for me. Maybe for you, it shows up as really seeing how everybody's equal, or maybe for you, you tend to compare yourself as lesser than. I mean, I do all three. Don't be fooled. I do all three. But definitely, like, we all have our patterns around this, and we all have it to greater or lesser degrees. And we might compare our mental facilities. We might compare our health, our age. We might compare our bodies, our minds, we might compare our accomplishments, we might compare our possessions. Really, I think there's no shortage of things that we could compare. I might compare my garden to someone else's, but in general, this comparing ourselves to other people, even if it's equal, it's set to cause suffering. So, really, if you are a Brazil nut, don't compare yourself to a banana. A banana is a banana, and a Brazil nut is a Brazil nut. It doesn't make sense to compare the banana and the Brazil nut, right? Because each arises in this metaphor. You can be the banana or you can be the Brazil nut. But in this metaphor, it's this understanding that each of us, you, me, all of us, we arise due to our conditions. We arise due to our genetic heritage, our experiences, the culture we live in. And that's unique to each of us. So if you are a Brazil nut, do not compare yourself to a banana. So all the time we might compare, compare ourselves politically. I'm not one of those that think wrong. I'm one of those that votes in the right way. Or we might do, I don't smoke, or, ooh, this one's for me. I'm a vegetarian. I'm definitely a superior person. This is a joke, 100%, right? Like we think ourselves for whatever it might be. Oh, I shop at Piggly Wiggly. I think that's an East Coast grocery store. Or maybe I'm not on Instagram or Facebook. I'm not like those other people. So when we're doing that, we're separating ourselves from others. We're creating a sense of self. We're creating a sense of self. I'm like this. You are like that. So we're creating a sense of self out of these things. about being better or worse than or equal to. So I'm not talking about discernment. I think this can be a little confusing sometimes about discernment. It's important that we have discernment. Discernment is part of the Buddhist path. It's part of the teaching. It's very important, this discriminating wisdom to know, like for you, what's important for you. Maybe you notice, oh, I could not use you. I could use myself as an example. When I'm on a lot of social media, like my mind kind of circles and goes down the drain. So I'll use my discernment as to how much I'm on. But I don't have to add the extra of like, oh, I'm better because I don't go on social media. Do you see what I mean by like this extra layer? It's like the next step. We can make a discernment about whatever it might be. And we don't have to take that next step of creating a hierarchy in our mind. So it doesn't mean that we stop trying, that we stop meditating. But it does mean that we can start to look at the tendency inside of ourselves to feel superior or inferior based on our efforts and qualifications, that that's extraneous, that we can start to become self-righteous. But really, the problem is that we're creating a sense of self. Even when we judge ourselves as equal to, sometimes this can be a little confusing. Like, oh, of course, maybe like all humans are equal. But it really still is a sense of subtle separation, like not being overdressed or underdressed, wanting to fit in. Don't want to be ahead of the pack, don't want to be behind the pack, not wanting to stand out too much, wanting to be on the same page. So we're all the same. It can be comforting and reassuring, but it can be harmful too, such as the pain of assimilation for immigrants or the pain of erasing your personality to fit in. Do you all know that saying, go along to get along? Go along to get along. There's a lot of us have that training, like just go along to get along, but we actually then can lose our voice or lose the distinctions that are actually important. So really all of this tendency is rooted in a sense of self, that there's a you that's existing separate from everything else. It's rooted in this sense of not being good enough as we are, or being afraid that we don't actually belong. When in fact, you belong. You would not be here if you didn't belong. That you are part of this whole amazing thing of life. That the sunlight that we take in on our skin is the same sun that grows the food that we eat that gives our energy. That without the sun, there would not be trees and there would not be food and there would not be bees to pollinate our food. Really, that we are all held, that we all belong in the bigger sense, not separate from everything else. And yet we can get into a kind of hierarchical thinking in our minds. So what is that tendency really that makes you think that everything else belongs in this universe and somehow you are not good enough? And what kind of freedom would come if we were not lost in comparing mind, if we were not lost in the story of me? So for me, when I started paying attention to this, I was like, oh, wow, I like compare myself as superior a lot. But then when I looked closely at the emotions that were driving it underneath, most of the time when I was comparing myself as better than someone else, it turns out I was feeling insecure and I was trying to bolster myself up. Are you familiar with that, right? Like these very human tendencies. So what kind of freedom would come if it were okay to be just as we are? You know, when I go in the garden, I don't look at the lettuce and think, oh, that horrible lettuce, it's not, it's really like its own fault that it's not doing well. You know, what I do is I look at the lettuce, and if I see it's not flourishing, I might support, I might give it a little more fertilizer, a little more water, a little less water, so that the comparing actually is taking us away from being able to just see what's here. So it's not just personal to you, comparing mine. You do it, I do it, we all do it. It's in the culture, it's in this atmosphere that we swim in. So this, I'm number one. We are the best. Like, oh, my team is the best, or we're the best religion, or we're the best ethnic group, or the best dancer, or have the most followers, or the best writer. So I've been watching, not recently, but in the winter, I watched this show called The Great Pottery Throwdown. It's a British show, and it's these amateur potters, so people who make ceramic, go on TV, and they have little competitions. And it's a really beautiful show because the judges spend a lot of time with each potter teaching them, and the critiques they teach. And then when the potter does something well, the judges might cry. It's very sweet. And then they always have to, because of the format of the show, like it's a format of comparison. So at the end of each show, they have to pick someone to go off, and everybody always cries. And to me, it seems like such a thing, because making something, a piece of ceramic art, making a picture, making a garden, making a meal. There's so many things that we do all the time that it's a miracle of creativity and aliveness. And in some ways, when we start to compare, it's like boxing it in. Again, why compare? If you're a banana, compare yourself to a Brazil nut, right? Like this, it's like comparing apples to oranges. So you are a unique expression of all the forces, personal and impersonal, that make you. Why compare yourself to others when each of us is like that? Something actually quite beautiful and mysterious. So here's a quote from Ram Dass. He says, when you go out into the woods and you look at trees, you see all these different trees, and some of them are bent, and some of them are straight, and some of them are evergreens, and some of them are whatever. And you look at the tree and you allow it. You see why it is the way it is. You sort of understand that it didn't get enough light, and so it turned that way. And you don't get all emotional about it. You just allow it. You appreciate the tree. The minute you get near humans, you lose all that. And you are constantly saying, you are to this, or I am to that. That judgment mind comes in. And so Ram Dass says, he says, and so I practice turning people into trees, which means appreciating them just the way they are. Isn't that nice? I think that's so beautiful, right? Because you are you. We can't help ourselves. If we could help ourselves, we could, we would, right? But this humanness with our great beauty and all of our foibles too. So it's so easy to make a hierarchy in our mind personally, and then we live in a culture where there's a hierarchy of humans. So there's systemic and collective dimensions to this that we have been handed, that we are handed in our culture. It's very easy to dehumanize others. So did you know, maybe you didn't, because I didn't know this, there was a papal decree in 1452, so some centuries ago, that people could take land away if the people who owned the land were not Christian. And then we have systems in place that make it okay to enslave people. Or how about blame the unhoused? We have systems, not just in our own minds, but we have systems out in the world of hierarchy of who is better and more deserving and who is less. And it's not just in history, but it's happening right now. And it is an inherent violence. And there was something when I started to see that, because for me, like the comparing mind for me personally feels like, oh, it's just a habit. Like it's just something I've done. But when I started to connect the dots between that and, oh, this is a systemic thing that's happening around race and class and immigration status and gender identity, that there's so much violence in that hierarchy, it in some ways gives more inspiration to actually look how we do it personally. Because how we are personally is how our culture is, because we are our culture. So Krishnamurti said, "My mind is the society." So what he's meaning is that an individual's thoughts, beliefs, and conditioning directly reflect the larger societal structures and norms. So he's essentially saying that our individual mind, that your mind, that my mind, is not separate from the collective consciousness of society. And that we can work with our own minds, and that can contribute a change to the wider society. So we find ourselves in a context where we're being told that there are some people that are better and some that are lesser. And that is wrong. It's incorrect on so many different levels. And we do this collectively and we do this individually. And it has its roots in craving. Craving to become, or craving to not become. And it creates a sense of confinement that doesn't allow us to live freely. So maybe for you, when you feel less than, it might be this feeling of shrinking, or a shameful feeling, or being small. Or sometimes if it gets really strong, it'll be hard even to meet someone's eyes. Or when we feel better than, sometimes there can be a superior feeling or a kind of righteousness feeling. And for me, these are little clues where our mindfulness can really support us. So when we're practicing our mindfulness during our half hour meditation, our 45 minute, whatever meditation length you do, where it's like we're tuning up our attention to start to be able to notice the different feelings that come, or the different mind heart states that come. And so the shrinking, shameful feeling, maybe that would be a little clue for you, or that self-righteousness feeling, that could be a little clue too. So what if there were no qualifications, no agenda for the person that you must be? What if you were just you? Imagine that. Imagine that. I had this insight the other day in the morning. It just came to me, the sense that me, that you, that all of us, that each of us are deeply connected, that we're not separate. We're not the same, but we're also not separate from this beautiful world. That I exist, like I was saying, that I exist because my parents met, because their parents met. I exist because the whole of human history happened. It's the same for you too. Like you, your genetic heritage is the heritage of humanity showing up right here. That you don't have to be the best at anything or feel bad about being not good enough, because it's a weird construct. You belong. You're not anything other than here, than belonging, than a part of. It's like you are an expression of the infinite intelligence of the universe manifesting right here, and you belong to all of it. You belong to the deep interconnected nature of everythingness, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, the interbeingness. But then we all do this. We divide and create a hierarchy. We have locked ourselves out and made belonging conditional. So these qualifications are confining. They cause us to suffer personally, and they also cause the suffering of homophobia, transphobia, racism, misogyny in the larger culture. So let's stop. Let's stop, shall we? Let's stop playing this game. Let's stop participating in the global hierarchy. So, this phenomena of comparing mind is called mana in Pali. So the teachings of the Buddha are in the language of Pali, and the term is mana, MANA, and it's often translated as conceit. And it means not conceit like somebody's conceited, like we might say in English. It's the conceit that there is a you that exists separate from everything else, that there's some fixed thing that's you. It's a conceit, it's a misunderstanding. So it's also considered to be one of the last things to go on our road to awakening. I think this is amazing. So, full awakening, once it finally arises, manas is one of the last things. This conceit that there is a you is one of the last things to go. It remains a companion to the end of the road. So I might invite us to not try and get rid of it so much as just to begin to see it. Like, oh, when is it here? Can we notice that feeling of feeling less than, or that feeling of when we're going along to get along? So, or that feeling of self-righteousness. And notice what's underneath, what's driving that. There's often like a little bit of tenderness or vulnerability there driving that. So we're not trying to get rid of it necessarily in a sort of direct way. We're trying to instead look and see it when it's here. Like we could have a bingo competition, and I'm sure I would be the winner of who had the most comparisons, right? It's kind of ridiculous, like how much our mind does the comparing. But it's important to just begin to start to see it so we can sort of see the weave, or the how much it's woven into things. Because if we think, oh gosh, I heard this talk and I heard the teaching of the Buddha that this comparing mind, it causes suffering, and I don't want to cause suffering. And what did Tara Brach say? She said that you go around annoying people if you're comparing, so I'm going to stop it. And we kind of like push it down, but it gets really dangerous then because it's still going to be playing out, but it's gone undercover. So your homework, if you want homework, is to gather information for yourself about this tendency. First, we have to notice when it is happening. So we have to notice when it's happening. And then to notice, how does it feel? Like, what's the drive underneath? What's the vulnerability, or what's it coming from? How are you feeling when it happens? Are there certain situations where it happens more? If there's a certain situation where it's happening a lot, is there a way where you can support yourself within that situation, so you have just a little more scaffolding, a little more support, like the lettuce in the garden or the tree in the forest, like finding ways to support ourselves. So, and then can we give ourselves self-appreciation? So Kristen Neff, who's taught a lot about self-compassion, talks about the difference between self-appreciation versus self-esteem. So self-esteem is often how we're making ourselves feel better or worse in comparison to others, whereas self-appreciation is just seeing our humanity and appreciating ourselves for our humanity. Like we would appreciate the trees in the forest, like Ram Dass is telling us. So that our Dharma practice, our Dhamma practice, it's not just about a formal sitting meditation, but a never-ending process of working with our own pride and ego. And the good news is you'll be able to start working on this right away. You won't have to wait very long, right? You'll be able to start practicing right away. So, the instruction really is to just start noticing when it's happening and letting go of the urge to try to be perfect. In fact, don't try to be anyone at all. Just be quiet and open in the moment. You are much bigger than all of this. You are not separate from the whole thing. You are much bigger than all of this, like endless space. So the manas, this comparing mind, it's problematic because it solidifies our sense of self. When we compare ourselves to others, even as equal to others, the illusion of a separate permanent me is reinforced. We're creating that sense of a me. And that's contrary to the Buddhist understanding of not self and impermanence and dukkha. And this manas, this comparing mind, it leads to suffering. It's the root cause of much of human suffering. And it can also contribute to unwholesome actions. It can lead to behaviors driven by egoism, by attachment, by this desire to become something better or more or improved. It can be driven by attachment and ill will and perpetuate the suffering, the cycle of suffering. So, our practice of mindfulness, just some awareness to notice when it's happening, is really the first thing. And then to remember to be humble, right? To remember to be humble so we can bow to life circumstances and cultivate a heart that can welcome all things equally, right? All things. So, in essence, the Buddhist teachings of conceit, of comparing mind, it emphasizes the illusion. I like the word misunderstanding, really. It emphasizes the misunderstanding that we have that there's someone that can be compared to. So, the essence is if you are a banana, do not compare yourself to a Brazil nut. And if you are a Brazil nut, do not compare yourself to a banana. All right, my friends, that's what I have for us. Let's take a little pause and just see if anything arises in your mind. Okay, so I was wondering if there's any questions, comments, or anything that you've learned about working with this for yourself, because I know many of you have, or if it's a new concept for you, your sort of your yes buts. So I just want to open the space and you can raise your hand or you can just unmute yourself, because I think we're a small enough group that we could. Just open for any conversation. Let's see, Mary Kelly, go ahead.
Thank you so much for this talk. One of the things I noticed about myself is there a lot of my comparison, mine is comparing myself to myself.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know? And it's interesting because there is a real difference between the comparing that has kind of that judgy feel to it, because there's a I don't know, it's kind of like it's like a top energy down feeling, whereas the discerning, which is actually really important, you know, it's like I used to be able to do this and now I can do that, and it's much more open. It's much more spacious. It feels really kind. And this, that same thing happens with other people. And I could really, for me, the that comparing it, I don't know, there's a restriction to it. There's a tightness to it that if I can really stay in my body, that's for me is a way to know that it's happening. And I have to sometimes just, God love me, I gotta laugh at myself. It's just because it's just like, really? This is what you're gonna think or say. But yeah, I mean, I can really see sometimes how I can make myself suffer needlessly. So thank you so much. This is a really good food for thought.
Mary Kelly, I like how you're bringing out the felt difference, because I think between discernment and the comparing judging part, because I feel like sometimes it can be a little confusing, the parse out the difference, but you used words like open or spacious, and then when the judging comes in, the comparison around the judging, then it's got a restrictive feeling, it's got a more repressive or top down, like a mental activity. So thank you for bringing that out. That's really beautiful and helpful, in fact. Let's see, Sherry and Bowman. Did I say your name's correct?
Cherie.
Cherie. Okay, I'm sorry, Cherie.
Okay, great. This is a really good talk, Ashley, and very timely for me. You say that you notice yourself with the comparing mind of better than, and I do that a lot too, but I also notice that I also do a lot of less than. And I think that what it all comes down to is, our self-esteem. I was reading today about arrogance and, what that really is. And it's kind of a feeling or a way of superiority, but really underneath that is a feeling of inferiority. So I really like what you said about, if you're feeling superior to someone or something, like my politics are more moral than yours, or I have a better idea about how to parent your child or whatever, to kind of go to the body and see, okay, well, what's really the feeling behind this? Because it's interesting that it's the complete opposite of what it appears to be. Interesting. So thank you.
Yeah, it is really interesting that it's coming from really like the yeah, like that feeling of even the comparing as better than is coming from this feeling of not being good enough, or that sense of really vulnerability, like the vulnerability of having a human, like it's hard to be a human. Maybe you find it easy. I find it hard, right? Like the dukkha, there's that which is hard to bear, the vulnerability of the whole thing, and how like all the mechanisms that our mind goes through to try and protect ourselves against that, really. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And then Zoe, let's hear from Zoe.
This talk was so timely and wonderful, so synchronous for me as well. I think about the comparing mind, the little things that come up day to day, the little moment to moment discernments where you realize that you're judging or comparing yourself or others or situations. But then every once in a while, like what's happening for me right now, something larger is coming up, like in my life, where it's a decision point, and you have a situation that's presenting itself, and you say, should I do this or should I do that? And you know it's going to be a big choice. It's a big fork in the road. But there's a lot of comparing within that, and I don't, a lot of judgment. There's a lot of, well, this is what's presenting itself, but I really wish it would be something else. I really wish it would be, the offer would be better than that. I really wish it was a little bit more this instead of that. And then there's a lot that gets layered on. And I don't know if that's comparing mind or not, or if that's something else. Because you can certainly, then a lot of emotion can come into that if you can't sort through it. And I think I need, it would be helpful to hear your thoughts on that, because I think clarity around that would help unravel some of it more to say, am I just comparing what it actually is to what it, the ideal of what it should be? Or, and I'm making myself suffer because it doesn't measure up to what I want it to be. Or is this really something else? I'm not really sure. I don't know if you could speak to that.
I think this is a beautiful question that points to the messiness or the task that we're called upon to wrestle with these concepts and practices. So it's not just an idea. Like how do we meet the situation where you're having to make a choice, like a big fork in the road is what you're saying, correct? Like a fork in the road. And how do you make a choice in a way that's in alignment with your values? Right, that's in alignment with highest and best for you and your family system and the world too. Because in my mind, well, this is a little tangential, but like what will support you in your flourishing? And then we do need to make discernments, like okay, so this offer has this amount of money or this, right? Like so we'll need to make discernments, and then the tricky part is the messy part is the when the mind gets oh, let's put it this way, when the nervous system gets activated, right? Like, oh, like not feeling safe, or your survival needs get activated, and then the mind will tell these stories that are really actually maybe not so skillful. And so I would recommend, or you could play with actually finding ways to support your nervous system. So like the hand on the chest, or talking with a good friend, or like all these things, so that you can start to parse out like where's the emotionality coming and how can I make a decision? Because we can't know the future. We can never know the future. Like we just can't. And so making a decision based on values, based on not out of fear. I don't know, does this help at all? I'm not sure it's really quite what you're asking. Yeah.
Yeah,
How does
because
it
my
look?
question isn't quite clear. I mean, it's when I'm sort of in a state where I'm going, I have a decision to make, and I am doing like column A and column B, and weighing, you know, which one sounds better and which one is going to feel better, and you know, what trying to see down the road what that's going to be like if I go out down this way or that way, you know, and a lot of it's in the unknown. And I, you know, emotions come up. There's the fear, there's some anxiety, there's some excitement, but you know, but then there's some disappointment within it. It's not what I, you know,
Yeah.
it's like, it's not exactly what I was hoping for. It's not exactly the way I wanted it to be. Does that mean that, is that discernment, or is that like comparing some ideal? This is the way it really should be in life if everything was perfect. This is how nice everything should have been, you know, instead of this is really what it is, and it's only going to be this good. So that it's the comparison in that regard. It's like the
Yeah.
opportunity versus the ideal. And I don't know if that's comparing mind. Part of it's comparing mind, I think. I
To
think
me,
what you're
it
saying is
sounds,
helpful. Sorry.
yeah, to me, it really sounds like it's a matter of like what are the offers? And of course, like your mind has ideas about you, what they should be or what you would want them to be, but what you have is what you have. And then looking for ways to support your nervous system. I hope that makes sense to all of you. Like support yourself so that you feel centered. You know, do a yoga class, go in nature, do some art, do some meditation, talk to some, like all these things so that the choice as best you can is coming from your values. And really, that's all we can do. Like we can't know. Like, and when the mind is spinning on, like it should be like this, or I want it to be like that, or what's going to happen, it's because we've become dysregulated, and it's harder to make a choice then.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And then Deborah.
Hi, thank you so much. To echo what somebody else just said, this was so pertinent in so many ways and on so many levels. And I also just wanted to share with you that your quote, which I wrote down a long time ago, and you've said it more than once, it's a practice, not a perfect, comes in so handy all the time. And I shared it recently with a person 3,000 miles away who's in another generation from a whole other culture. And she loved it. She has nothing to do with Dharma. And she just loved it. And so I just wanted to say it's a practice, not a perfect. It's something that I use so often. And I think it relates to me finding my way between judging and discerning. And, you know, am I parsing out what I need to know and how do I feel about that? And then where do I go from there? Two, am I just being grumpy or bitchy or sad or, you know, and this, am I just being judgmental? So, you brought up so many important and rich things, and I love it, and I love you for it. So thank you so much. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. So I just want to point out, because a couple of you said this, and I feel like I hear this all of the time, and it happens for me too, that the talk, right? Like the talk is always so timely. You know, I've been teaching yoga for 20, more than 25 years now, and people will come up, like I always give like a little dharma during the yoga, and people come up and be like, oh, that was so timely. And do you know what I have to say about that? That's because the dharma, the teachings, are so timely. They're so precious and we need them. We need them all the time. That's, well, you know this. You're here on a Sunday night. I see all of you every time I come, right? Like we just need these teachings so much. They're like water on parched ground or something, right? Like that sense. And we need the teachings and they're always timely, any time of day, morning, noon, or night, always timely. All right, so let's do unless there's and oh Kylie, oh I'm sorry, I almost forgot you. Kylie, please, I want to hear from you too.
Thanks, Ashley. Just very quickly, I just wanted to totally endorse what you were saying about it being about offering support for the nervous system when dealing with a judgmental mind. Because for me, it's never about my reactivity is never really about the choices, the cognized decision making. It's about the uncertainty and tolerance. And I'm just recognizing that, you know. I mean, I suffer anxiety anyway, but being able to use a more embodied approach has just shifted everything. This can't be solved. This can't be healed in the mind. And yeah, I just really wanted to endorse what you were saying as, yeah, what I'm living. Thank you.
Thank you, Kylie. Thank you. I'm on a year-long deep study program of the nervous system, and one of the things that's been really interesting to me is this teaching that when our autonomic nervous system, so fight, flight, or freeze, you all are probably familiar with that language, even if you've not studied it, right? Like we get activated, something happens. So when we're in fight, flight, or freeze, that the story that the mind will tell matches the body. And instead of trying to change it from the top down, I think Mary Kelly was talking about this, right? Like addressing the body, because when we become not activated anymore, when we become regulated or when we become centered, then the story in the mind changes. Have you ever noticed that? So interesting. So the story is state dependent. So let's, be like, oh, our bodies, yeah.